Oh, that's right. Just having a great conversation over here with Mike, Representative Mike Pitts. And he is in our new studio. What do you think of my new studio over here, Mike?
I love it.
Yeah.
Like the setup. It's really great.
Yeah. It's going to be, when it gets all finished, it's going to be really, really something. But right now, it is great. We are at, do you have any trouble finding 637 Durst Avenue East?
Only someone, and I don't mean this wrong, but only a blind man would have trouble with the signs that's out there that says 637 Durst Avenue.
There you go. All right. Well, we're here this afternoon, and, you know, there's so many issues to talk about, and I do want to talk about the monument thing, but I think we'll save that to later in the show. I'd rather talk about some of the other things that are out there, because I'm afraid once we start talking about monuments and everything, we'll never get to anything else. So, you're on the ethics. You're a chair of the ethics, aren't you?
Chair of the House Ethics, that's
House,
correct.
House Ethics. And I know a lot of people aren't really following up or watching this that much, but if you watch the what is happening down there in Columbia, it looks like there's a big mess down there, Mike.
Well, there's a mess, but it's under the microscope as well, and it's in progress right now. The grand jury is meeting this week. People are testifying right now while you and I are talking before the grand jury. And eventually, there will be sunshine on that mess. It's been put in the forefront, and pieces of it unraveled a layer at a time. There are several people under indictment, House members, one senator. There are people testifying from industry this particular week. Pamela Lackey from South Carolina's head for AT&T is one of the people that testified yesterday, with Bart Daniels, a very high-powered attorney in tow.
Are these lobbyists? Is the from the lobbyist side, or no, where the, does the business the,
these
come
are,
in?
These are corporate heads. These are folks at the top of the food chain in the corporate world that are in South Carolina that are talking. The word is that Blue Cross Blue Shield executives will be called in if they weren't there today, and others. One of the governor's top people was called in this
yesterday.
Week.
Yesterday, yeah,
yep.
Yesterday.
Trey Walker, and that's the governor's chief of staff. He's also represented Blue Cross Blue Shield in the University of South Carolina in the past. So
seems to be a kind of a lobbyist thing here going on. Is that where we're talking about, the lobbyist part, and how all this influenced what went on?
Well, that is the question. How much influence went on, and what effect did it actually have? And then all of that equates to dollars in people's pockets. And that's the gist of the entire investigation and probe.
And then there's the Quinn part of this, where they were... it sounds like they were washing dollars and then returning it right back to the person, so they ended up with money in their pockets. I mean, it just seems to go on.
Well, to simplify it, the allegations, and remember, these are allegations. Those folks that have been indicted have not been convicted, and we operate under our Constitution, not Napoleonic law. So that is directly and absolutely what the indictment against Senator Corson says. In a nutshell, it would be writing a check from my campaign account for $20,000 to a political firm. The political firm sends a check to an LLC connected, and then the LLC writes a check back to me personally. So no money, no campaign work actually got
transpired,
done.
Transpired, yes.
According to the
indictment.
The indictment. And bottom line, that is money laundering. So if Senator Corson were proven guilty of the charges, then it would stand to reason that the other side of that transaction would be just as guilty, and that's RQ&A, Richard Quinn and Associates.
And they certainly, Quinn certainly has been involved in a lot of political offices being run for.
Well, some big names in the state of South Carolina are in RQ&A's stable. You have Governor Henry McMaster. You have the Attorney General, Alan Wilson, that's in that stable. You have Charlie Condon, who was in that stable as the Attorney General. And again, Henry McMaster, who was the Attorney General prior to becoming governor. So
those and are there's others. Big, yeah, that's just a few of them. And, yeah, there's others.
And then you have Joe Wilson, mm-hmm. Congressman, and Lindsey Graham, Senator, that come out of that stable. So there's a lot of speculation there. But like I said again, the indictments that have already come out have not headed in the federal direction at all.
Well, how has that affected this past session of the House and the Senate right there in Columbia? How did that affect things? Did it affect it? Did it not affect it?
It you got to remember, the House has been under this cloud for 4 years. It started with Speaker of the House, Bobby Harrell, mm-hmm. and the indictment with him. Bobby ended up pleading guilty and resigning from the House of Representatives. On his way out, I think he probably talked to Slid a little bit in the Attorney General's office, and that initiated the rest of the investigation. With that said, it's expanded and exploded. So your original question, how has it affected the House? It's been terrible operating under a black cloud of an investigation for 4 years. Folks are actually, at this point, afraid to do their job.
That's what I was wondering. And since lobbyists are... well, they are a part of, because they are the ones that have the knowledge about their specific causes. Everybody can be considered a lobbyist of some type. If I come down and lobby for my own, for the radio business, for that, I'm lobbying on that. So, I mean, that has to affect a lobbyist. Did I hear that last year it was something like $194,000 in lobbyist money from the hospitals? From the hospital consortium. I mean, that's a huge amount of money, but
that wouldn't surprise me any. You know, a lobbyist, you and I have had this conversation before, a lobbyist is not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
And a good lobbyist is a good thing, because they have the information and the ability to give me the information in a nutshell about any particular issue that's going to be on the floor.
That would take you a while to sift through and find the bottom line.
Exactly. But on the other hand, a good lobbyist will tell me what the opposition's perspective is going to be. So in 15 to 20 minutes with a good lobbyist, I can get a pretty good picture of what both sides of the debate's going to be over on a given issue. Now, a bad lobbyist is a different story, but the real question is money involved. Did a legislator lobby, receive money from a lobbyist, receive money from a corporation for helping a lobbyist? Those are the real questions that David Pascoe, the solicitor in charge of this, is digging into. I'll just be glad when it's all over. I'll give you an example as chairman of ethics. 2 years ago, We did four opinions through the Ethics Committee. Last year, we did three. Already this year, we've done 16 opinions. That's people coming to the Ethics Committee and asking a formal question.
Like, is this okay?
Is this okay?
Did I do right here, I guess, yes. is what you're saying.
Yes. Can, inside the ethics laws, is this good? Well, you know, the average person out there is going to say, well, hell, all you got to do is look at the law and stay within the law. Well, the ethics laws are not that easy and clear sometimes. It's sort of like the NCAA's recruiting regulations. They're contradictory at points. So people are wanting clear, firm parameters in which to operate. And that's why they're coming and asking for those opinions. The 10-member House Ethics Committee receives that opinion and looks into all aspects of it, compares it to the law with our attorneys, and then renders a decision. And that decision under the law that went into effect April 1st then becomes law itself. That opinion has the weight of statutory law. So it's the investigation has had positive effects because it's forced some people
to rethink what they're doing.
Well, to really take it seriously. And I'm not saying that people don't take it seriously, but until this investigation, they never really thought about that it is absolute code of law. So that's been a positive that came out of it. The negative is that from the time Bobby Harrell became under investigation to the time he finally resigned, the House was a rudderless ship. He was basically ineffective. And with it still going on, people are very wary of who they talk to and what exactly they say, because they don't know who's part of the investigation and who's not. So it makes it difficult to do your job in Columbia at this point in time. The Senate for 3 years had been able to sit back and say, look at them. But then when Senator Corson was indicted, then it became very real for them as well.
You know, I think the thing about ethics is it's hard to get it all out there, and it's hard to, I would think it would be very difficult to have people wanting to jump on board to become representatives and senators and this type of thing.
For the pay, and I've said this several times over the years, for the pay, you're not going to get people who want to do public service for the right reasons. And what I mean by that, it is now a full-time job. I was in Columbia Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I will be in Columbia tomorrow.
And you said you really haven't taken, you're supposed to be off during the summer, aren't you? Once the session ends?
Yes, and yeah. I've not been. But my point to that is it's a full-time job, and the expectations of the public is full-time. If they need something, they want me to take care of it right now today, and I should be available 24/7. But the pay doesn't match that, and young people coming out can't make a living and then serve full-time in Columbia and do the job the way people expect it to be done today. Now, when you couple that with the internet, with the attack of different special interest groups, bloggers, and everything else thrown into the mix, it's not much of a fun place to be anymore, and new people come in and leave very quickly.
So how are you feeling about things, Mike? I mean, you've been at this for a while. How are you feeling about things futuristically?
It's about 95 degrees outside today.
It's hot out there. It's nice and cool in here.
I think that at some point, using the analogy of military, you could see this the government of South Carolina go from generals and colonels and E7, E8 NCOs to butter bars and PFCs. And what I mean by that, you could go to a lot of special interest leadership and very little people, very few people that are down there to do what they think is right for the state of South Carolina.
Well, I think we're dealing with that across the country.
We are. You're seeing it nationwide. And there's a different feeling amongst people out there now. You know, Jeff Duncan and I talk a lot. He's a very good friend. And I told Jeff, you know, you expect to get shot by your enemies. It's hard when you start taking bullets in the back.
Right.
And that's become commonplace. When you start getting shot from behind by people that should be on your side, makes it very difficult.
Yeah, it's a whole general feel that is totally changing. And you know, I was wondering. I happened to read an article the other day that said that they are going to look at possibly taxing medications, which have been taxed exempt. A sales tax type thing on that. And I think they're talking about taxing food too. And the dollars that the legislature is passing by, what do you think, Mike? Is this something that would have any legs to it? The governor, I saw him the other day and he goes, no, that's not going to happen. But could that have legs?
Well, there was a committee, a joint committee put together several years ago to look at tax exemptions across the board. And there are a great plethora of tax exemptions out there. I don't think you would ever see the tax put back on groceries. I was one that voted to take that off. I don't see that medicine should be taxed. That should be a last thing that should be taxed. I think we should be going in the other direction.
Meaning,
I think we should prioritize where we are in our budget. We should eliminate programs that are not producing and redirect that money into the budget instead of looking at raising taxes. The only tax I've considered and really went to bat for was the gasoline tax, and we're already seeing the results of that tax, not in the actual dollars coming in and being spent, but in the confidence that people, let's look locally, that construction companies like Satterfield Construction now have, knowing that if I hire and if I purchase equipment, that the rug's not going to be pulled out from under me next week. If you do it year to year like we have done the last 3 years, there's no confidence for that. And currently, there's not nearly enough contractors in South Carolina to do the amount of road work necessary.
Right.
So the confidence is there, and you're seeing it. You're seeing those companies hire people, invest in equipment, which...
And build new buildings.
Correct.
Yes, they built a new building. Satterfield did build a new building. Yeah. I mean, it looks good. It looks good. Yes.
But that's my point. And all of that spreads across the economy. And you're starting to see work. Because of the first money we actually put out there, it shows you how long it takes to go through a bid process, get all of the permitting, federal permitting and everything done, and start moving forward. Plus, we now have the confidence of manufacturers in our state that were telling us, if you don't fix the roads, we don't want to be here anymore.
What tire company was that?
There were. Well, actually, it was all of them, one of them went out on a limb and said it publicly. The rest of them were saying it to us as legislators.
Yeah. You know, I think it is so interesting what's said behind closed doors and what's put out there publicly, isn't it, Mike?
Well, it takes a little more courage to see it in the open than it does to see it.
That's because you could get fired in the back, right?
That's right. Well, it's like the internet. It's easy for people to take shots in the anonymity of a computer. But if they have to come and see you face-to-face at a public forum and say the same thing, they're not going to do it.
That's right. Hey, we're going to hear just a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back in just a moment. If you've got a question for Mike, yes, we're going to be talking about the monuments. And we're going to be talking about a lot more because it's not just the monuments. It's where this is all headed that I think that Mike might be able to give us some insight to. So you stay right here on WCRS. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Yep, I know I'm on. I'm just having too much fun having Mike Pitts all to myself in my studio here this afternoon. Anyways, it's been a long time since you've been on. It's good to have you on.
It's good to be here. It's always good to be here.
Yeah.
You always are a fun interview, no matter whether we agree or disagree.
Mm-hmm.
You are a professional, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much. You know, the monuments, what we are seeing out there in our country is just, I think, absolutely frightening. What happened in Charlottesville, there's several different parts of that, not just the taking down of the monument, but the police and how everything was handled there. Then we go to Durham, people climbing up and tearing down monuments there. This is just something that, and this wasn't going to happen in North Carolina because they have some type of heritage type act, and yet they are destroying public property. Where was it that they took some monuments out? Was it Baltimore? They took them out in the heat of night, at the night, and just took them off.
Mississippi. Louisiana, New Orleans.
New Orleans has had a big deal about that. Some monuments, they're taking and covering them up with wood so that they're not seen anymore. And, of course, we had our own issue here in South Carolina back in 2015 after the Charleston 9. And, of course, you were involved in that with the taking down of the Confederate flag off of the State House grounds. I know one of the things that you actually said when it came down to the end of this, that you really didn't want to hurt your good friend, who you had no idea that this was a bother to him about the flag. Who was that?
Lonnie Hosey and Bill Clyburn.
Right. And so as we look at this today, what do you think we should be thinking about this?
Well, I said it from the House floor during the debate that, number one, the monument on the State House grounds, the flag, had absolutely nothing to do with the shooting in Charleston. The flag has been co-opted. The Confederate battle flag has been co-opted by hate groups. So has a lot of other things in this nation. And any symbol that we have could be co-opted by a hate group. We have to keep that separate. And if you are so sensitive that a piece of bronze or a piece of rock mm-hmm. can cause you great amount of grief, then you've got bigger problems than a piece of granite, a piece of rock, a piece of marble, whatever. Alan West said it very clear, very well. He wrote an article over the weekend about Charlottesville that was a great article. Condoleezza Rice did a great article on it. There's an article by, his name slips me now. I put it on my Facebook page. It's an article.
I saw it, yes, about Robert Lee.
About Robert E. Lee.
Right.
You know, you got people out there screaming that Robert E. Lee owned slaves. Robert E. Lee never owned slaves. The only time he could have been accused of ownership of slaves was when he was executor for his mother-in-law's estate. And those slaves were freed by the will of the estate. It was his father-in-law's estate he handled for his mother-in-law.
Right.
And that doctor did a very good job of that.
And he's a black man.
He's a black man, public educated in D.C. schools.
And he was, didn't he work at, worked at the
Smithsonian.
Smithsonian, but he worked at the gravesite.
Arlington. That was something I put on my Facebook page just before, or a day before I read his particular article. I said, you know, if you're going to play this out all the way, that anything that is connected to Southern heritage, then, and you're going to separate yourself completely from that, if it's connected to slavery, Southern heritage, are we going to exhume all of the black soldiers from Arlington because Arlington was Robert E. Lee's estate? That was his plantation.
Mm-hmm.
So if Robert E. Lee was so bad that we have to make that huge separation, then I guess we should exhume those soldiers. And I'm being facetious.
Right.
I don't want to exhume any of those soldiers. They all deserve to be where they are. So does Robert E. Lee. You know, during the debate on the monuments.
On the monuments or the flag?
On the flag itself.
Right, okay.
On the flag. When we were debating that, I said that it's the tip of the iceberg. There's a much larger agenda out there, and it is to whitewash and erase all Southern heritage. I also said, I had family that fought on both sides in that war. Some of the Pittses moved to Ohio from South Carolina to fight for the North. I disowned them. I don't claim them anymore.
Okay.
I'm joking.
Okay.
But they,
you have to say that, otherwise, Mike, people take you serious
they
here.
Think
yeah,
I'm
that's
serious.
Right.
And none, not one of the ancestors that I have that fought in the Civil War owned slaves. Every one of them were subsistence farmers or small plantation owners.
Mm-hmm.
None of them owned slaves, not one. So why were they fighting? They were fighting for their homeland. Prior to the Civil War, the states, when you said the United States of America, it was states.
Right.
It was plural. Now it's singular, United States of America, one country. And that came out of the Civil War. So you have to think during those terms, my allegiance would have been to South Carolina, which was a colony, then a state, before it was created. I still believe in that form of government. That was a great battle between Jefferson and Adams over whether it should be singular or plural.
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson believed that the states dominated, and I do too. Now, was slavery a major factor in that war? Absolutely. Absolutely. But states' rights is what the fight was over. And that's one thing that black doctor that I talked about, his article, states very clearly. He draws it out in history that there were slave states in the North, and some of those still existed until after that, after the war. Let's look at one other part of that equation. Sherman one of the most beloved of the northern generals, today would be in Leavenworth for war crimes, because he burned a path across the South, raping, pillaging, burning, and destroying.
Right.
He would be charged with war crimes. Lindsey Graham would be screaming that he does not represent us. He should be in prison. And I agree with it. I once told a reporter that asked me if I could talk to anyone living or dead, who would I want to talk to? And I said, Tecumseh Sherman. She said, why? I said, so I could send him back to hell personally.
God.
But, and this, as I stated from the floor of the House, was tip of the iceberg. And I said, when that flag comes down, if we remove the entire monument, the entire memorial, that's the tip of the iceberg. It will be streets. It will be monuments. It will be anything Southern heritage. That was the warning I gave. You know, the interesting part of it is that when you back up, right after the shooting, the national press asked our governor about the association. And she said there was none, that it was not an issue. 24 hours later,
that was Governor Haley,
a 100-degree flip-flop, and the flag had to come down. The National Republican Committee did not want to bring the First in the South
primary
to the state and have the flag being a focal point of question for the Republican candidates. They called
How do you know that? Sorry, I gotta ask.
I'm an old cop.
Okay.
They
called you?
Nikki Haley was asked or told, if this is gonna be held there, that flag needs to come down. That's why she flipped her position. You asked me earlier about running again.
Mm-hmm.
My intention is to run again. I'm not sure I'm going to run as a Republican again. I've been stabbed in the back by the Republican Party over this issue, and I don't know that I will run as a Republican again when we sign up in March. That coming from the National Republican Party, the governor that flipped, a Speaker of the House that flipped on me during the debate, has left a really bad taste in my mouth. And I'm not a Democrat, so that's going to leave me having to run as an independent or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I'm going to do at this point, but I do know that my intention is to run. Going back to the flag issue, if we had simply done what the plan was and put the regimental flag, taken down the Confederate battle flag, put the regimental flag up, there would have been no position for a national cry to destroy all things Southern. We opened the door to that. You combine that with war on police and a racial divide created by Barack Obama, and we are sitting on a powder keg that could lead to a civil war in this nation. We've talked about the possibility of that before because of immigration issues and other things. But our country is a powder keg right now, and it could very easily explode. Some people want that to happen so they can do martial law can take over. Some people want it to happen because they think we can change government that way. And I assure you, government will be changed. But people that want to see civil war in this country, I don't think have seen violence firsthand. If they did, they would not want that in the presence of children and grandchildren.
Well, where do you think this is actually coming from, Mike?
I mean,
you know, some people say it's the young people. I say it's got to be coming from another place.
I think part of it is internal. I think there are people with a lot of money. Somebody's paying for these demonstrators, and I call them domestic terrorists that are rioting and tearing stuff up. Someone is paying for them to travel from place to place and to show up. Although we have our own that are perfectly willing to. This week there was a letter sent to Lawrence County Council wanting the name of Lawrence County changed because Henry Lawrence was a slave owner and wants the Confederate Memorial on the
square.
Courthouse square to come down. And that was by the Reverend Kennedy, who is an activist in Lawrence. So it's a long way from seeing an end to this. Yes, we have a Heritage Act, and yes, it is against the law for them to tear it down. And if you look at North Carolina, Durham, they tore the head off the statue there, but an arrest were made. But no one seemed in a big hurry to stop the destruction.
Correct. And that's part of my point here. We just are letting this happen and then saying it's not my fault.
Well, eventually there will be conflict. You can't, like in Charlottesville, who with any degree of sanity is going to put two emotional, volatile, polar opposites protesting at the same time in the same place?
Exactly.
And not expect something to happen.
You know, down there in Charleston, the mayor down there, John Tecklenburg, has said he's not going to try to remove any of the city's many Confederate monuments, but he wants them to seek to be able to have them tell a broader narrative, to tell the good, the bad, the warts, put the whole story out there.
Well, I heard some stuff during the protest by the Sioux Indians in Montana on the pipeline issue, that we should tell the story of the Sioux. We should tell the story of Native Americans the way it's supposed to be. I agree. History is not always a pretty picture. Quite often it's an ugly picture because it comes from violence. It comes from things. Let me be very clear. I abhor slavery. God did not create man to rule over other men to that level. God is the only one that should rule over a man to that level. He created government. I firmly believe in God. I believe he ordained government to keep order from chaos. I have to keep a grip on this or I get mad sometimes with this stuff. But if we allow history to be repainted,
revisionist history,
then we end up repeating it. And people may not believe that, but it's true. And slavery was a great part of this country. And when I say great, I mean it was a huge piece of the puzzle. I don't mean it was a great thing.
And a lot of it was because we had the plantations and they needed the labor.
That's correct.
I mean, now, we didn't have machines.
Where did the slaves come from? They were sold by their own people. Slavery still exists.
Oh, yeah.
On other continents in this nation, in this world. Africa especially still
Brazil had slaves up until the 1940s.
And the Middle East still has slaves. Have slaves. Amnesty International had to quit buying kids out of slavery because the parents would sell them into slavery, get the money from Amnesty International to buy them back, and then resell them into slavery. So they had an income by doing that. That's in National Geographic if somebody wants the source on that. Mm-hmm. It's not a pretty picture, but it's one that people deserve to know about because it is how this country was created. Was Thomas Jefferson a slave owner? Yes. Was he a bad person? I don't think so. Without Thomas Jefferson, we wouldn't have the Constitution, and we would not have this great country and the freedoms provided by that Constitution. Let's switch back to the Native Americans, American Indians at this point. Talking about the Sioux, who did the Sioux take the land from? The Cheyenne?
I don't know.
The Navajo? The tribes warred all the time of the Native Americans, taking land back and forth from each other.
Well, if you take away Thomas Jefferson and the Constitution, and you take away the other people that were involved in signing and designing it, and we call them our forefathers and writers and how intelligent and smart and everything were, and you tear them all down, where does that leave us with a Bill of Rights and with a Constitution? Can we even have that anymore?
No, and that's chaos. That's what some people want. This country, there's not another country in the world that could take us down.
There's not another country, but we could take ourselves down.
But we can take ourselves down. And not Nikita Haley, but Nikita Khrushchev predicted that years ago.
Well, it has made me very, very sad to see what is happening and to realize that we could just be on the forefront of just tearing ourselves apart. We're already tore apart, but this thing with the monuments and the southern monuments and all of this could just change our entire culture.
It already has, and it's not going to change. And you brought up the fact of what I said about my two friends.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking across the State House lawn with those guys going to lunch, and I saw both of them look toward the flag, the Confederate battle flag, and I saw pain in Lonnie Hosey's eyes. And Lonnie Hosey's one of the best friends I've got down there. He's a Black Marine Vietnam veteran. 3 Purple Hearts, Silver Star. He's an American hero and as humble as anybody could ever be. If we took that battle flag down and took that pain away from him, I'm okay with that. But tearing the entire memorial down that came from an agreement between 2 opposing groups to take it off of the State House dome and remove it from the dome, we violated an agreement between both sides that was mediated to that flag. So I'm saying all that to say, if we had taken the flag down and not done away with the entire memorial, you wouldn't have any of the issues I believe that we have right now over Southern heritage. We could have replaced it with my amendment called for replacing it with a regimental flag. Probably not 1% of 1% of the people in this state would have known what that flag meant. Heck, we could have put the flag up of the Lawrence Briars, which was the group that went down to Columbia from Lawrence to join the Confederate Army. Not all people who believe in Southern heritage are racist, and not all people who believe in Southern heritage are white supremacist. But people like the Southern Poverty Law Firm want to lump all people into one basket.
You're right.
And that is not going to work. You've got to have people like me and Lonnie Hosey that can sit down and talk about the issues without wanting to get in a fight over the issues.
Well, you know, that's my biggest problem, Mike, is that we've lost that ability to sit down across from each other and have opposing views and maybe listen to what somebody has to say and maybe learn something and maybe change your opinion a little bit, and you may be able to change theirs. That used to be the art of the deal, the art of negotiating, was sitting down and understanding through conversation. We've lost that. In Washington, we've lost that. I don't know about Columbia, but in Washington, we definitely have lost that.
I agree. And I think Washington sets the example for a lot of what's going on by the hardcore divide that's there. And it's ridiculous. It's like watching a bunch of five-year-olds in a sandbox fighting over a truck, a toy truck. You got to be able to come to agreement. Government and the ability to govern is compromise.
Correct.
And what I say about that is I will compromise to make something work. I will take as much ground as I can get in the negotiation and compromise to make it work. Will I pick the ball back up in the future and try to move it forward for my position again? Absolutely. The other side will as well. As long as I don't compromise principle, I'm fine. I will compromise position to make it work all day.
We don't do that in Washington anymore.
They do it. We do it in Columbia, but it is becoming Washingtonized. You're starting to see that divide creep in.
So, as we sit here on a Thursday afternoon, we're on WCRS. What holds the future, Mike, for the monuments? What do you think is going to happen? Are we going to be able to, is the governor, is the state going to be able to hold to the Heritage Act? Or are we going to start seeing ripples and rifts and the same type of strife that we've seen in Charlottesville, Durham? Are we going to see that here?
I think that it will try to be imposed on us. I think their external forces will try to do it. But I hope that South Carolina will do exactly what we did after the shooting in Charleston, which was the white community in Charleston and the black community in Charleston come together and tell those people to go packing and go back home, that we don't need them. If that happens in our state, yes, we'll be fine. But if we allow paid demonstrators and homeborn terrorists come into our communities, then it could get as ugly as it is in a lot of other places. If it continues and you poke the bear enough, sooner or later the bear fights back.
And the bear is?
The bear is civil war. If both sides keep poking at each other, sooner or later George Soros is going to get his wish and this country is going to explode.
And that would be an absolute shame for our country.
I don't think you'd ever see this country the same again. I don't know that we'll ever see it the same again after Barack Obama, but, you know, people, overly sensitive people scream, you don't like Barack Obama because he's black. Mm-hmm. I just talked about several black folks that I highly respect. Mm-hmm. Alan West, Condoleezza Rice. We are of the same political ideology. We are conservative in thought. Barack Obama was the absolute polar opposite. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there was anything that I ever agreed on him with politically in 8 years. Nothing.
Right.
So what I saw with him was immediate accusation in an instance like the Michael Brown shooting, demonizing the police and trying to victimize a criminal. Mm-hmm. And that created a divide that brings us to where we are today. A real war on police, a divide between races that level heads may not be able to overcome before violence. It may come after violence. And to be honest with you, I'm not trying to be a doomsayer right before the solar eclipse, but...
Oh, yeah, that's Monday.
I really don't like what I'm seeing out there right now.
I don't either. Makes me very sad.
Lonnie Hosey is my brother. Lonnie Hosey spilled blood. And I don't like the disruption that is creating divides that could suck me and him into a vacuum. I don't like that. There are younger people with hotter heads on both sides that would like to see that explode, but I certainly don't.
Well, I just wonder if they know what they would be getting if they got that.
No, they don't. They do not.
I think that's the, and Peggy and I were having a discussion this morning about, can we really look at ourselves, baby boomers, as giving so much to our kids and making everything so equal and so, you know, this, that they just don't feel that they should have to wait or understand anything? Have we possibly been the behind this in some way in making this happen? Yeah.
Yes. Trying to give them everything that we did not have. And then taking it too far, I can't be accused of this, but taking any incentive out, participation awards, and no all-star teams. Kids know who the best athletes in the class are.
Sure.
They know who the toughest kids in the class are. They know who the... not necessarily the smartest, but that's what kids would call them. That's the kids that are willing to do the work it takes to get their homework done and everything and have A's in class. Yes, we've taken a lot of that incentive and initiative away from people.
And the respect for each other and the respect.
I think that was coming. I blame a lot of that on the influence of Hollywood and who's to blame for letting that creep in? I have the power of the on off and the channel changer in my house. So if it comes on in my house, then I'm responsible for letting my kids watch it.
Yeah.
It's like the Colin Kaepernick incident. He can't get a job again in the NFL. Now you got other people this year doing the same thing. What happens when the NFL goes broke and those athletes have no ability to make a living other than the same way average Joe does? Cut their nose off to spite their face.
It's true. Well, let us hope and pray that our state has the ability to separate itself out. We certainly, I think, were a beacon to the country after the Charleston 9, the way things were handled. Let's hope that whether the Confederate monuments down there in Charleston can go with, as the mayor wants, to be able to tell a bigger story. And I've always thought that that was the reason that you had these, was they didn't always tell the whole story, but they were monuments there, and if you were interested, you could learn more about the person.
Groups, homeschool groups especially, and public school groups come to the state house the whole time we're in session,
mm-hmm.
and tour the campus. And you'll see them stop at every one of the memorials and discuss what it is, what it means. That's what they're there for.
Correct.
It's a reminder of the bloodiest war in the history of the nation. It was Americans against Americans. That's the best fighters in the world. Facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it was the bloodiest war, that combined with the tactics and the armament of the times. But you don't gain anything by trying to erase it. You gain by sitting down, talking about the differences and finding common ground. And That's what that mayor's saying, and that's exactly what we all need to adhere to.
That's right. So if you want to make a difference here, anybody out there, we need to try to conduct ourselves, and we need to learn from these things and not make the same mistake.
And we need to be civil about it. That's the biggest thing. People have become very uncivil about things, and makes it difficult. But the black preachers in Charleston told Al Sharpton, "We don't need your help." If you noticed, he was not allowed to speak. Mm-hmm. They made a decision that we're not going to have violence and rioting in our community. And they did the right thing. And that took a lot of guts.
Yep.
I praise those guys. That took a lot of guts. It would have been easy for them
to stand back and say, go ahead.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And create a monster. And they did not.
Well, that's what I mean. I think South Carolina held their heads high and were able to act in a civil manner. And let us just hope and pray that this doesn't happen in our state, and that there can be an accommodation that works to keep the stories alive.
It can be. And I'm very hopeful that it is, because this is the greatest nation on earth. I want it to remain that way. I've got grandkids.
I know you do. One that's really growing.
Oh, yeah. You need to hear the story about that one.
Okay.
I teach her on a regular basis and have since she was 5 years old, different techniques to defend herself.
Okay.
And she is at 11 years old, 5'8", and a very attractive young lady. Inside that 5'8", attractive teenage-looking body is a little 11-year-old girl. So I teach her moves to break away if someone were to try to abduct her and things like that. So this particular time, I was teaching her how to break if someone grabbed her and pinned her arms mm-hmm. to her side. Now, I'm not going to say over the air exactly what I taught her, because then I might be helping somebody know mm-hmm. what to watch for if it's an abductor listening out there. I said, if you do this and you do it properly, you break it. And she broke my nose.
She did it properly, right?
She said, "Oh, Poppy, are you okay?" I said, "Well, no, you broke my nose." I said, "But I now know that you can do it, and if someone tried to abduct you with that move, he's going to be in a lot of pain." So Dr. Terracetus told me yesterday he thought he could fix it.
Well, all righty then. Well, Mike Pitts, I sure appreciate you sitting down and just sharing some thoughts here today. I think it was a little bit different interview. We talked about the things that are bothering us and things that are facing our state, and I sure appreciate you coming in and just having a honest conversation with us.
I appreciate the opportunity. You know, the racial issue is not an easy one for a lot of people to talk about.
You're right.
But I enjoy sitting down and talking to people who are willing to listen and have an open dialogue on the issue, because quite often I don't have a full understanding of where they're coming from, and vice versa. Several African-American legislators came to me after the flag debate and said, "You made me think of a lot of things that I had never thought of, and the heritage aspect of it being one."
Wow. That was great. That was great. And that's the problem. We used to communicate. We used to understand. We used to be able to do these things. And we don't do it as well. Mike Pitts, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, as always.
All right. That's going to do it for us. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We'll join SNIT in progress. Bye-bye, everybody.